Hey, thanks for listening to Medded Podcast. I'm Jimmy, and I'm just letting you know ahead of time that we spoil a lot of stuff in every episode. We don't mean to all the time, and we don't always preface beforehand, but that's what this is for. So be prepared for spoilers for any topic or anything related to the topic of this episode. Enjoy!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Medded, a podcast. I'm Paul.
I'm Tom.
I'm Jimmy.
And I'm not happy to be here.
If this is your first time joining us or not, we are Medded Podcast, meta-analysis of everything.
Video games.
And not video games.
And foreshadowing.
And skins.
We'll find out later.
Whatever that means. Hi, welcome back to Medded Podcast. We're going to talk about a movie this week. Mm-hmm. And that movie is Get Out.
Part of our mysterious.
I foreshadowed that when I said foreshadowing, but then I realized you have to actually like be clever and not just say foreshadowing.
Usually,
foreshadowing.
Usually, yeah. Most books I read, when somebody writes foreshadowing, I'm like, oh,
it's foreshadowing.
Of course,
it's like having a movie where like people are saying their lines and they're like, "This is the moral of this entire story."
Or they like say the name of the movie and they like look at the camera and like smile.
I have the titular line.
It's like
he said the thing.
It's how you creatively write when you're like 8 years old. You just like don't know how to like create plot, so you're just like, and then they die, and you're like, wait.
They went to the house, but it
was
empty.
It made sense
in
my head. There was irony in my head somewhere.
Man, I am tired of all these Star Wars.
Let's end the Star Wars. What?
Anyways.
Anywho, we're talking about Get Out. Mm-hmm. Came out 2017.
Get Out.
It's by, written by or produced by or whatever, directed by Jordan Peele.
It's written by.
It's not directed by? Okay, well, either way. He did a lot about it, and he is from the Key and Peele comedy group, and he's just this all-around cool guy, because then he made a horror film, which is this one, and you're like, oh. A comedy writer makes a horror film. Time to be scared? Question mark.
I don't think I was ever scared.
It wasn't really, I guess, like horror in the sense of like, more thriller. Like, there was only one real moment where it was kind of like had the sort of not like the cliche kind of like jump thing where like someone walks through the corridor and it like the music's like you know, and you like you kind of jump a little bit, but I think that was like the only time. There's only one part in that movie where that actually happened.
I think there's about two instances where they actually try to like jump scare you with either like a camera pan or like the running part where it's like music getting louder. Yeah, like they're not, I think, most of the time trying to be like a spooky, scary story. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely think, I mean, I think it's more for the commentary. It's not supposed to be like some hack and slash or like
definitely
scary kind of thing. And we know that Key and Peele or Peele, Jordan Peele can like do commentary. It's like all of their skits or something.
Basically. Except the one about like Continental Breakfast. I don't get that.
I still don't understand that one.
I don't get that one at all. But yeah, we're going to talk about just kind of everything in this film because there's a lot to it and it's interesting. So
you sound like you're not sure about that.
I'm
definitely positive that this film is does exist.
God.
Yeah, me too.
And we're gonna talk about it because there is a lot to it. Like, for instance, craziness within it.
All right, someone else will take charge of the direction of the conversation.
Okay, so I mean, let's start off.
Let's start with the premise. What's the premise?
Yeah, let's not spoil the base of the plot, but it's like this guy,
Chris.
How do
we not spoil it?
I'm just saying, we're going to at the end, but at the beginning of the podcast, this guy, Chris, and his girlfriend, Rose, are going to Rose's parents' house just to, like, hang out because it's not in New York, and so they're going away to the country.
Yeah, meet the parents.
Yeah, it's meet the parents style, mm-hmm. like... Oh, no, I've never met your parents before. We've only been dating for 3 months.
But the twist, Rose is white.
Rose is white and Chris is black. That's literally the twist.
Well, it's even like the start of it, too, where you're like, it's like one thing Chris brings up right away, being like, did you tell your parents I was black kind of thing? And it just like leads into this entire, I mean, that conversation at the start definitely sets up the entire like commentary for the film itself.
Definitely. It's like he is wary that this white girl's parents, who are inevitably also white, are going to be concerned that she's dating a black guy. And you're like, oh, I guess that makes, like, us as white people, we're just like, would it make sense?
What? I think that makes total sense. That's a very legitimate concern.
No, I'm just saying, it's like mixed race couples, like back in the day, was like illegal. So the fact that
wasn't set back in the day, though.
In America, yeah, it's like fucking.
No, but this the movie came is.
No,
set
I know,
in
but that's what I'm saying. Day. That the whole like racism prevalent in America like today makes this movie make more sense in a 2017 setting, because like it shouldn't be a problem, but the fact that you can make like a thriller kind of scary movie about just a mixed race couple existing kind of
tells a lot. This movie wasn't really made for white people.
Yeah.
I think that comes out in like the converse, like when I watched it, there's the conversation that you were talking about where Chris has to have the conversation with Rose to be like, yeah, hey, have you told your parents that I'm black? And she's like, no, it's fine. And then she goes on to be like, oh, I had no idea. And of course, like, she's acting because you find out she's a psychopath.
But like, she's an actor.
But like, the fact that he had to have that conversation is something that like wouldn't really cross my mind as a white person, right? Mm. And there's been so many times when talking with some of my friends who are, who are multiracial and in relationships with other like white people, right? And hearing about their conversations that they had as a kid in comparison to like the conversations that I had as a kid, you know, like mine was always just like, whatever, stranger danger, where they had to have conversations about what to do when a police stops you. And that's never a conversation that I had to have. And so like when thinking about it, this is like the themes that are coming up may seem weird to you or us, right? Because
or not
like,
weird,
oh, yeah,
but
maybe,
foreign.
Maybe it shouldn't exist. And it's like, oh, we live in, you know, it's easier for white people to think like, oh, we live in like a post-racial society, which is just wrong. And we know it's wrong.
100%.
But
we want to.
But we want to. And so it's like, as you're saying, like, oh, it's weird that this has to have a movie like this. But I'm assuming for like people who aren't white, this is like, oh no, this is like shit we see every day.
They're like, oh,
like,
this
of course
is,
people
this
aren't like,
standard.
like this taking your brains out and like all that shit. But right. Yeah, this is like actually happening for every day.
I guess it wasn't like a foreign concept, because like I was aware that this is part of like other people's experience, but it's obviously like not something I've ever experienced as a white man.
Yeah. So. It's kind of like upsetting in that the like stereotype exists to such a degree that they just put it in a movie and you're like, you accept it as fact because you're like, of course that's how a mixed racial couple would meet like their parents or whatever. It's like, did he tell his parent? Like we learn later, like Chris's parents are not living. So it's like, he doesn't have parents to tell that he's dating a white girl, but it's like, there would be the same, like, or not same conversation, but like the same, did you tell your parents I'm white if the movie didn't end the way it did, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it starts off on that weird, like, awkward footing of, like, introducing this character to parents that now you're... Also, it's not even the first scene, because the first scene is a dude getting abducted scarily in, like, a suburb, And, like, that's how the movie starts, and you're just kind of left with this couple at the, like, end of that scene, and you're like, oh, okay, what happened there, though? Come back, guy in a knight helmet and who beat it, like, obviously kidnapped this person.
Ugh.
I really like the intro of this
movie. Yeah, it was a good hook, and then it, like, sucks you in with the,
yeah.
the weird.
I feel like I was really dumb the first time watching it. And I had no idea, like, how this the entire movie was going to, like, because I stayed away from spoilers, so I had no idea what was even going to happen after this abduction thing. I didn't know if he was the main character or not at this point, the guy who was abducted. And then, like, the rest of the movie happens, and you're like, oh, that was just the biggest, like, foreshadowing moment of the entire film, and the rest of the movie basically could be framed around that one abduction. And the fact that it's such a small part in the film, I think, is super important for just, like, recognizing the impact of it being such, like, yeah. a small scene.
So before I had watched it, I actually thought it was going to be a satire. I honestly had no idea it was a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
When I eventually went to go watch it, I knew it was a horror movie. But for the first, like, couple months when I hadn't seen it yet, I thought it was a satire. Like, I didn't think it was actually supposed to be a horror movie. Because it just, like, the concept is, like, kind of ridiculous, right? Like, oh, I can see it also playing out as a comedy where they're, like, making light of it. But then if I were to watch, like, as soon as I watched it, the first scene is a guy getting abducted. I'm like, oh, okay. There was, like, nothing funny about that.
Where's the punchline?
Yeah, where's the punchline? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you see, like, directed or, like, written by Jordan Peele, and you're like,
yeah, it's like, he's done only funny things. This is going to be a funny movie.
Yeah.
I think his star power did sell it a lot. I think that's why it's gotten a lot of traction. I mean, besides the fact that it's actually a really, really good movie, I think the fact that Jordan Peele's name is, like, all over it, you're like, okay, we know he, like, everything Jordan Peele has done in the past has either been very funny or, like, impactful to some degree. So the fact that he, like, was involved heavily in this, you're like, yeah, I will watch this movie because it has, like, a name that I recognize. That definitely made me want to watch it more, especially when it showed up on, like, HBO, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch this movie. It's going to be real good.
I also feel like part of that, too, is, like, going back to that idea that, it was this guy who was, you know, part of a comedy group, and then it's, like, he puts out a movie that's, like, a horror thriller, and you're like, wait a minute, like, like, what? Like, there's a certain degree of, like, curiosity to be, like, well, how does this play out, right? Like, right. And I think part of it, too, was kind of going into it with that. And that's, like, and so this is what I mean by, like, it feels like a series of skits, is that, like, the style of each scene and, like, how it progresses feels very much like how Key and Peele, like, skits progress. Like, the buildup of, like, the scene to some, like, either revelation or unveiling fact. Like, it just, for me, it's, like, it's very reminiscent in a way where, like, it's definitely presented in a similar fashion. Like, I think of, like, the more Key and Peele skits that are done, like, in a very, like, satirical fashion of, like, the one where, like, the Flicker one, where it's, like, the really dramatic movie about, like, just doing, but a lot of the writing of it was, like, very much felt, it's, like, it's really creative is what it comes down to. Like, this movie has a ton of subtlety to mm-hmm. it, and I don't know, it's very reminiscent that way.
Yeah,
and that's
I feel like you could put the scene where the Japanese guy asks Chris, like, what it is like to be an African-American, or, like, the benefits of being an African-American in, like, today's society, and just, like, put the Key and Peele, like, boom, 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 like, before it, and, like, that's the skit, and you're like, punchline, do we have the punchline? And you're like, no, there's no. This is just the really awkward conversation that they're having in this movie. Mm-hmm. Wasn't this on the heels of, like, the actual Key and Peele movie where they were detectives with, like, a cat or something?
Oh, my gosh. Like, yeah, the movie was named after the cat. It was, like,
yeah,
Roscoe.
It was the cat name movie. And I don't know. It must have been before it, but it's, like, that was the only film that Jordan Peele had been in before, as far as I could tell. Or, like, you know, the biggest motion picture that was, like, Key and Peele related tangentially. I don't know. It's kind of funny that you get a cat detective movie and then to Get Out is kind of a leap.
Keanu
the cat. When did that come out?
It was in 2016, and then Get Out was 2017.
That's ridiculous. That's like a ridiculous movie follow-up to a cat detective movie, right?
I think it's a natural progression.
Nah, that's the next page of Keanu, really. It's a social commentary.
Yeah, it's actually the same. It's made in the same universe.
Oh.
And so everything takes place in... No, I haven't seen Keanu. I can't make a reference.
It all makes sense now. Who knew? But let's talk about, do you want to kind of like break down some characters in the movie as far as like likable versus unlikable or like impactful?
Well, something that
everyone
something
seems
about.
To really hate fucking Jeremy, right?
Yeah. What the, but that's like one thing that I actually really like about this movie is that like almost every character introduced was like relevant in like, and there's like a lot of movies where like you'll have a character that like sort of serves a scene, and I guess like that happens like partway through the movie when you have like the actual party and it's filled with a bunch of people and stuff. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like the main, I guess, like series of characters that were just prevalent throughout the entire movie felt like they each had like a pretty significant impact on like what was going on. And so that was something that I really appreciated, is that, like, you didn't have a character who was just there because he was the comic relief, but, like, he still served an extremely important purpose to, like, the progression of the plot and everything of the sort. So, like, nothing felt like kind of like a cheap shot or whatever. Like, it was just, or, you know, like, a slapstick comedy kind of thing. Like, every character had, like, very relevant, like, importance or whatever.
Yeah, every character was at least some... like part necessary to the progression of like Chris's being there or Chris like making it there in the first place and everything that followed, like his progression into madness that like just happens throughout the film where you're like, Chris is a totally level-headed guy, and then you're like stabbing a guy with a steer in the head of a and you're like, oh my god, he's covered in blood for like the last quarter of the movie, and you're just like, I did not expect this to happen.
It was only like the last 15 minutes. Shit went downhill like
pretty fast.
It's like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good, the movie does a very good job of that slow build and like instant payoff where, or rather not instant payoff. It's like payoff over time where, If you had caught on to a bunch of stuff happening throughout the beginning of the film, the last 20 minutes not only make a whole ton of sense, but also you get a lot of like gratifying kills like that are just like, oh yes, we needed these after the atrocities that were committed in the first three quarters, you know, like 7/8 of this movie, basically.
Oh yeah. And I kind of known what was going to happen in the movie because I did spoil it for myself. So I know I'm an idiot. But like basically got to watch how Rose, the entire movie, is just doing shit like as a manipulator, like everything she says and does is just like some ulterior motive being, and the ulterior motive being like being able to sell Chris's body.
Yeah.
So like I remember that specifically the time when they get pulled over by the cops and she convinces the cop like not to check her or Chris's ID, and because like checking Chris's ID would mean that he's like on the books in that area and like then could be like traced and all that shit. And then in Chris's mind, like, she's just being a homie, you know. She's just being cool.
And in the viewer's mind, you're like, oh, she's like standing up for him.
Yeah,
and
maybe like, this is going to be all great for him.
Yeah, it's like maybe she isn't an ass.
Abducting a black guy.
Yeah, there was like an interview with Jordan Peele or whatever, where like fans got to ask questions or whatever. And one of the things he said was like, yeah, you guys need to like go watch the movie again. Again, just watch Rose like the whole time. Like,
yeah,
because it's like all just double meanings and like different meaning when you know like her character, right?
Yeah, I think interesting. That, like, her character boils down to the scene where she's digging through the purse and, like, she has the keys the whole time. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, as, like, a viewer and, like, with Chris, you're like, get the fucking keys. Like, this is a bad situation. Let's fucking go. And then she's like, oh, but I can't.
And you're like, you know she's, like, probably bad, but, like, you still have a little bit of hope. But, like, maybe she's been, like, fine this whole time. Even though you saw, like, all the pictures and stuff, and then...
I know, naively, we're like, maybe there's a hidden compartment in the purse. She might not be evil. And you're like, nope, she's a fucking
that
evil.
That actress, like, did such a good job.
So yeah. Good.
It's crazy. Yeah. The 180 from, like, the two different characters, or, like, two different sides of that character were crazy.
The I think part of it for me was the... Also, like, the costume design for that character, because immediately after, you know, it's... inexplicably she's evil.
Who knew?
Or not inexplicably, but undeniably she's evil.
Yes.
Her physical appearance changes, right? So she has, like, the slicked back hair,
very,
like,
controlled,
all white
clean
jumpsuit, like, yeah, controlled, clean, very, like, calculated, and you're like, yep, you're cold. You're, like, actually,
yeah, calculating.
We're raised to be, yeah, calculating.
It kind of reminds me of, like, a, for whatever reason, like a Catholic school uniform or something. Like, it has some aspect of, like, a uniform to it. And it's very different than her, like, when she's trying to goad Chris into a sense of security, like, false sense of security, and she's wearing, like, you know, designer jeans or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's just, like, no graphic tee, just, like, white. Just, and again, the, like, the slick back hair is the instant, like, oh, she's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, this is a completely
nobody
different person.
Nobody slicks back their hair.
No.
Nobody does that.
Except Elvis. He's evil.
He's dead.
Yeah. And I think... he's dead. I think the opposite of her is Rod, Chris's friend. In that he is always on, like, Chris's side and even kind of, like, builds up conspiracies as to, like, why he's, like, why the weird stuff that happens before Chris is basically, like, super abducted and then actually ends up being, like, the hero of the story. And he's, like, the good opposite. It's hard to explain Rod at this point because he is written as such a, like, comedic relief character, but then he does have such a, like, heroic rise.
He kind of reminds me of the one, like, stoner character in Cabin in the Woods who, like, from the get-go,
oh, yeah,
like, has it figured out and is just always like, no, wait, like, let's do this really smart thing. And then everyone's like, let's do the totally dumb thing. And then, like, the entire time he's like, yeah, how about this? And then it's like you always are kind of, like, discounting him because it's like, oh, he's the comedic relief, right? But then in reality he's, like, the one who knows what's going on exactly. And it's like you listen to the, like, the shit that he says, like, when he, like, Rod says when he's at the police station, and you're like, that sounds totally fucking ridiculous. But then at the same time, you're like, it's exactly what's happening pretty much. Like,
yeah.
So it's just like, yeah.
Minus the sex slaves.
It's shit. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say shit. He's just one of my favorite characters. I love the part when he calls Chris's phone and Rose picks up and is faking, like, faking being upset and, like, saying that he left. And then, like, turns the 180 and starts saying, like, I know you want to fuck me. And then he's like, oh, shit, she's a genius. Like, that whole fucking scene is so brilliant in my mind because, like, he fucking knows that she is, like, bullshitting her mind out. And the whole, like, the whole time he's just like, I guess I got to go save my friend now. And you're just like, ah, fuck. I guess he has to go save Chris. And to be honest, when the lights show up at the end of the movie, you're like, I don't know if that's going to be Rod. I don't know if that's going to happen. And
right. Well, it totally let it up where, like, for me, when I first saw it, I was like one of two things, right? Like, it's Rod. But then part of me was also like, it's going to be the fucking cops from the start of the film who,
yeah,
like,
here to bust him, and he looks like he just murdered
and
all these people.
Well,
he did murder all these people, but
yeah, but, like, shit like that, and
they deserved it.
Who's that? Yeah, which for me, like, that's always, this movie kept you guessing in so many ways. And that was, like, one thing was, like, the ending where, like, you're just, like, it literally, like, could be a fucking tragedy, like, through and through.
Definitely.
Or, like, you know, the entire thing with Rose, where it's, like, the first half of the movie, you're like, oh, maybe she's not, like, crazy. Maybe, like, maybe she's just kind of been, like, oblivious to, like, right. all it's this stuff. It's just
the parents.
Somehow.
Or
somehow, yeah.
And the scummy fucking Joe Dirt
fucking
brother.
Fucking Jeremy ass.
Jeremy, that guy was so fucked.
Like, yeah. It's actually funny.
Yeah, I wanna wrestle.
What the fuck, dude?
It's actually funny you mentioned the ending, like, keeping you guessing, because when I finished watching the movie recently, I was on HBO, and there's actually an alternate ending that they did shoot that does have the cops, that is, like, Rod doesn't show up, it's just cops, they arrest him, he ends up in jail, and it completely changes, like, the entire, like, way the movie feels, because it's like Rod goes to, like, talk with him. He's like, we're working on it. Like, we got lawyers. And Chris is just like, at least they're, like, dead or whatever. And you're just like, that, what? This is very, like, I'm glad the real ending exists. Yeah. It's much more satisfying. but yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that they even, like, shot that, because I feel like that would that's everybody's alternate ending, is one they already thought of. Yes.
There's a pretty good bait.
Mm-hmm. Great bait and switch. They got you with the cop lights. Everybody's in that mindset at that point. You're like,
it's TSA, motherfucker.
Get TSA. Shit done.
God damn.
Yeah.
There was, like, that one thing as well that, in terms of, like, subtlety of this, is I think Glenn maybe mentioned this, but it was like the image, like, a lot of imagery used in this film, but, like, specifically that of, like, the deer.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of like this sort of, like, PTSD that settles in for, like, Chris, where it's, like, the idea of, like, wanting to, like, seeing things die is something that, like, he's not okay with, where it's, like, he wants it to be, like, almost, like, quick kind of thing, right? And I think it's, like, or it is rooted back to, like, his whole entire thing with his mom, like, the idea that, like, his mom was just there dying. Mm-hmm. And it, like, yeah, so just how that throughout the entire, like, you see, like, the deer dying in the beginning, and then, like, the dad makes the comment where he's like, yep, the deer are, like, they're, like, a menace. Like, yeah, like, a menace or something like that, and they just, like, they should be, like, eliminated or
that
culled.
That scene was so weird.
Yeah.
Like, why does this guy care so much? Like, it just went on and on.
Yeah. It was one of those things where, like, yeah, like, the scene could have been done, or, like, that guy would have seemed totally normal. That dad would have been totally okay if he was, like, like, don't feel too bad. Like, there's a lot of deer in this population. It's all out of control. And if it would just stop there, you'd been like, fair enough, right? Yeah. Like, he understands, normal. like ecosystems, I guess. But then for him to go on and be like, no, no, no. Like,
no, he understands ecosystems, bro.
Fucking
stop. Stop God yourself. Damn it.
He said ecosystems in the movie.
He did?
Yes. Oh,
well, he's dumb. He's the dumb one.
Yeah. Ecosystems.
But I think that's I think that's kind of like the point of that portion, is to realize that, like, he can say some cool things like, oh, I voted for Obama,
I voted again.
For a third time.
Yeah.
But, like, he still has a lack of regard for, you know, life.
Human life,
in some way.
Mm-hmm. I think, okay, life. going back to the deer, does Chris, like, kill the deer in the beginning after it's suffering?
No, he just leaves it.
He just leaves it?
It's, like, the same thing. It definitely symbolizes his mom, where it's, like, he just sits there and does nothing.
Oh, shit. Mm. Okay, so he doesn't actually,
like, put it out of its misery or something?
Yeah, he doesn't actually, like,
I don't think so.
Right? He doesn't, like, stab it or curb stomp or whatever. I don't know.
Curb stomp a dying deer. Yeah.
Either way.
Great either way, social commentary.
I feel like, again, like, the deer being pervasive through, like, them hitting it, the dad talking about it, and then a bust of a deer being in the basement, and then him using that as, like, his final, like, weapon to kill the aggressor is the most powerful. Like, he finally did overcome this, like, slow suffering, and counters it with, like, quick, I mean, painful, but, like, just very, like, vengeance on, like, these people who have, like, fucked up his like week.
Everything.
Yeah, like he this they week. Like basically were like they were basically gonna murder him and leave him in a ditch of his own mind. And so the fact that he like took the man like the deer thing, that's the thing I'm trying to like parse out is like
it's kind of like if yeah. you, I guess if you're trying to say like if it is a metaphor for like you know his mom and like how he doesn't he just thinks he doesn't do anything like when people need him to do something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like him literally like taking that like whole like problem and like using it to like do something about his current situation. Is that kind right. of what you're trying to say?
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yeah, like it's the physical manifestation of like him overcoming that moment where he did nothing when his mom was dying and he did everything to like quickly and efficiently solve the situation he was in using a deer head. So yeah,
that was so funny. Like that scene where the dad just like he's like hears a noise and he like looks down one side of the hallway and it's like completely quiet and then he just turns around and instantly it's like rammed by the deer. You're like, how is he like running across the hallway silently with this giant deer head? He is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's also like funny. One of the fucking I love the creative wordplay as well in this like entire.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, like in the entire film, like the one scene where like he sees the other guy at the party or whatever. They thinks he like where he's like, oh hey, like it's good to see like another brother here kind of thing. And it was the just like the guy being like, oh yes, yeah, like
mind swap.
It was Andre/Logan.
Yeah, which like I didn't know until like it got addressed later. It was like that was the dude at the beginning of the movie who got abducted, like you know, and
yeah.
But the entire thing where like someone I think like everyone was like asking like they're talking to Chris or whatever, and they're like, oh yeah, like what do you think of like your experience so far as like a, you know, as an African American in today's society? And then like the other guy walks by and he's like, oh, why don't we let him answer it instead? And the guy's like, well, so far my experience has been like quite pleasant, right?
Yeah, and you're like, so far,
like, which like it kind of like
into your, yeah, it's like into your life, I guess you could say.
Yeah, like you could say it like that, and it's kind of a weird way to say it, but then to be like. But then at the same time, it has this double meaning to it. And I think just, like, a lot of this has, like, a lot of... so much wordplay has so much double meaning in it, which definitely. I think just makes it for, like, such creative writing.
Yeah.
Well, that scene in particular also speaks to some of the other, like, subtle commentary that's going... Or not, maybe not so subtle commentary that's going on throughout the whole movie. But basically, like, the whole idea is that, you know, you can take... We always say, like, the whole idea, but we say the whole idea a lot. So is it really the whole idea?
Maybe it's just a part of the idea.
Yeah, just, like, the whole part of the idea. Yeah, part of the idea.
Yeah, an amount.
Is that...
a tidbit.
They can basically take the experience of black people, get rid of it, and then just take the, like, what they perceive as, like, the good parts, right? And so everybody's there to bid on a black body. That and they all want it for different reasons. Like one of the guys wants it because he thinks that black bodies are like in style, and then another person wants it because they want to be fast and like all these different things, but fail to recognize like all the other implications that come with being a black person even in today's society. And that's like, and that was like the pinnacle of it, right? Like him being like, oh, it's like, what's, what do you like? What does the guy say? He's just like, what do you think the benefits are? Do you think they have it better or worse than white people or something?
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like, whatever the thing was, and it was like, how can you, like, only like the most privileged person can think, that like,
yeah, like measure themselves
somehow, like they like all the things that they go through like don't exist and like. Racism is over and having a black body is so great because you have like years of genetic manipulation to be like bigger, faster, stronger.
Right.
And it's like, are you fucking real right now?
I mean, that's, I feel like the party is the biggest part with the most social commentary, and it comes off before you're aware of the whole like mind swapping thing as it's the weird, like, white people admiring just like the flesh of a person creepily. And
especially like, since you said flesh.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like they don't even acknowledge the person behind it. Right. Like, they don't acknowledge Chris as a person. They acknowledge Chris as a body, a vessel. And
right, it's, yeah.
There's the blind art dealer is the only guy who, like, gets it, kind of.
What is that, though? Because there's this whole commentary on, like, the commodification of black bodies.
Definitely. But then,
what is the significance? And I'm still trying to understand, like, what is the significance of the person who actually won the bid for Chris's body was somebody who said that, like, the race obviously, like, doesn't matter. Like, maybe there's some commentary about, like, color blindness there. I don't think so, though. Because then he's like, I just want to see through your eyes.
He wants, yeah. like, the artistic eye.
Yeah,
because the artistic eye. But then, like, so one of the things I was thinking is, like, mm-hmm. can you get the artistic eye, or is the eye also just, like, a perception, like, a manipulation right. of the brain, right? Like, you can't... Yeah.
Just, like, viewing the world through Chris's eyes and going to make you suddenly, like, an amazing photographer. Like, mm-hmm. Chris right. is the amazing photographer, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's more than just, like, his visual, like, connection to his brain. It's, like, his whole being makes him that way.
His the experience, which is, like, what you're kind of getting rid of with the brain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just, like, don't know what the significance of, like, his yeah. winning the bid is.
I think that's something I haven't figured out yet. Not that I'm, like, constantly thinking about this movie, but I kind of am. like, him being a blind art dealer and, like, he wasn't blind, so he knew, like, when he could see, he was very good at picking and selling art that, like, made him a rich man and a lot of money. And now that he's blind, he uses someone else to do this, but he wants to be able to see again so that he can somehow, like, rekindle his... I think it might be, like, a shallower version of what I'm thinking of, but it's, like, maybe he just wants to see again, and it doesn't really matter. Like, that's the thing, is, like, does it not really matter, black or white? Doesn't, like, the skin doesn't matter, but... He does put a big emphasis on, like, I want your eyes, and it's like he researched enough to, like, check out his website and Flickr or whatever, like, amount of photos he had to bid the biggest amount of money against all these other people to, like, get Chris, whereas, as you can see from, like, Chris finding the box of photographs of Rose's other boyfriends and stuff, it seems like there's been a lot of this going on, and it seems like the same people keep coming to this auction who are, like, trying to pick a new life, but they're going about it all in the wrong... I mean, they're all awful people, so I don't know. Like, he's irredeemable, but he does have that one, like, weird color blindness, like, it doesn't matter, I just want your eyes. And you're like, okay, that's creepy, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know, yeah. like, is there something to him, like, being the blind art dealer is, like, a ridiculous thing to be?
Yeah, so. I think part of it is also, like, I think just that, like, kind of, like, the complex of, like, humans in general, of, like, wanting something you don't have, right? Like, mm-hmm. just the premise of it, and, like, maybe this blind art dealer is or is not, like, maybe what is his statement of, like, is truthful in the sense of being, like, oh, it's just color blindness, black and white doesn't matter to me kind of thing, right? Like, maybe that does or does not kind of whatever. But mm-hmm. yeah, I think for him, it's this idea of, like, he wants something. Like, he admits that he wasn't even very good at photographs himself. But, like, here's this guy who can, like, do that. And, like, maybe by, like, becoming him, he can now do that kind of deal, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
and even though it's, like, insane because that's tied to, like, the mind, right? Like, your ability to, like, comprehend that. That's not, like, something that's, like, a, I guess, like, necessarily, like, a genetic thing or whatever. Like, it's literally just your perception of, like, what is or is not a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still, I think, just, like, that desire to have it because, like, you don't have it.
Okay.
It could be, like, some... I mean, we're all just guessing, but it could be, like, something else, too, where, like, it's kind of like a ruse isn't the right word, but, like, this guy, like, he's not, he's a good guy, he's not racist, like, race doesn't matter, but, like, I guess at the end, he still is, like, racist, despite thinking that, because, like, he still thinks he is more important than, like, Chris as far as, like...
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, like, racist or, like, selfish, but, I mean, it's something that's being said there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's... delusional. So he's... So to a certain, he is complicit in a system that, you know, disenfranchises black people and commodifies, you know, black bodies. Mm-hmm. So to say he's not, like, actively racist, right, but then he's still complicit in it makes him racist, which I think is, like, a commentary on, you know, being a bystander to
like
these systems that exist, but then...
Like, just saying race doesn't matter isn't good enough.
Right, and saying, like, let's move past the race thing. I really just want you for your eyes. And it's like, you're still killing somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it could even be tied back to, like, just literally the slave trade. You had people who weren't necessarily racist, but it's like, well, it's what we do. We buy and sell black people because, like, it's what we do in the South. And you're like, okay, but... like, maybe think about the people for a second, and they're like, no, it's just the way it's been done for hundreds of years. And you're like, oh my God, this is happening again with the whole auction. Like, he literally spent money,
like, a slave auction
to try and buy this person and, like, become, like, the side note is he tries to become this person, but, like, he's still purchasing this body and... the fact
as
that,
like, an object, not
an object, not as, like, a person. Yeah, it's so fucked up beyond. And they're just like, we're just gonna go play bingo. Haha, just kidding. We're actually pan up, selling your body, and you're like, oh my God. I feel like that's the part when I first watched the movie that I realized Rose was being, like, a shit, because she's clearly, like, taken him away. And, like,
while
at this point,
happening,
it's like, at this point, you could still be on Rose's side and be like, oh, like, they're actually having a conversation about leaving, but it's really her, like, taking him away from the auction so that they can, like, wrap it all up and, like, get
stalling.
Him. Yeah. And so that to me is even more fucked up, because you're like, oh, well, of course Rose is fucked up, because she's, like, trapping him in this disgusting situation. So
she's super fucked up. Yeah, like, the whole time it's like this illusion, and it's like this illusion of her being, like, really supportive and stuff, but, like, if you actually look at it, it's all just like she doesn't take anything he's saying seriously.
Yeah.
Obviously she's trying to manipulate him, and it's all just very manipulative, and, like, I don't know, I just think that's, like, weird though, because, like, before I knew that she was, like, evil, I kind of excused it as, like, I mean, it's probably, like, fine, and then... but it's actually, like, a really toxic relationship if that was, like, their real relationship.
Right. Yeah, if she wasn't fucked up in the end, and you're just, like... You're still, like, not listening to your significant other in this situation, and they, like, want to leave, and you're kind of going on your parents' side a little bit, and...
just, like brushing everything he's saying off as, like, a joke, or, like, whatever.
Yeah, that... dude, that pissed me off so much.
Yeah.
Because, like... I think they want you... I think, like, the writers want... Jordan, I guess, wanted you to, like, feel like they have, like, a good relationship, like, they're meeting the parents and they're happy or whatever. But, like, every time he said something of significance, which is, like, everything. Because
all
it's,
his
because
lines.
Because it's a movie and, like, no line is, you know...
frivolous.
Not significant. But, like, everything he would say to her... and then she would just, like, make a joke. Oh, so, like, you don't love me or blah, blah, blah. Or, like, you want me to set him up or... I don't know. Whatever the fuck she said.
Yeah,
and then...
bullshit.
And then he would just kind of, like, shut down. Like, you're right. Like, you're a white person. You wouldn't understand. Because, Because, like, he's like, oh,
that.
I go through this, like, all the time. Like, you don't know. You don't know because I'm your first black boyfriend. So he thinks. But... yeah, in reality, she's just, like, manipulating the whole time. And so when I saw that, there's, like, one scene in the bedroom where that exact thing happens, where she just, like, laughs it off, and then he's just like, yeah, never mind, I don't want to talk about it. And then she gets mad that he doesn't want to talk about it because she just joked about it. And I'm like, you fucked this up. And then she gets mad and walks out the room. No, fuck that.
You're like, she's in the wrong the whole time.
It's terrible.
Was that the... yeah, God, there was...
the cell phone?
I think it was the unplugging the phone.
Oh, what? I thought it was the like where the other God, it was like the grandpa or whatever. And he was talking about Rose and like a super.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, it might have been that one. Yeah. You're right.
And then he's like, yeah. He's like, I think he might be into you or something. And then.
Well, it's like she already knows the truth. So,
right.
Obviously, anything she says, like, could be really creepy if she's like, oh, it's my grandpa.
Yeah. Well, it also makes sense why she was so, like, jokative off of it. Because she does know the reality, being like, aha, of course. He would talk, grandpa. Like, kind and sweetly of me because it's, like, a relative. Like, it's a family member, you know? Mm. And the fact that, like, they refer to... I can't remember what his name was.
It's Walter.
Walter, yeah. And then, like, was it Gretchen? Was
definitely
it?
Not Gretchen.
Not Gretchen.
Georgina.
Georgina. It began with the G. I got the G part.
You got it.
Like, old school G names.
Glenn.
But yeah,
Glenn.
But they even introduced like Walter and Georgina being like, oh, they're like family, you know, like that entire idea with it. But like, I remember it was like, I think it was the dad who was talking about his, like, you know, the grandpa or whatever, where he was like, oh yeah, like he was actually like an Olympic runner and like he lost to like a black guy in like the Olympics, like, and he almost got over it, right?
Never able to beat him, and almost got a fast black body, and
yeah. And so it's like you get to see like those like parallels in it too, and like also the like the subtle imagery that's like literally in the at the end where like he's tied up when like to the chair before he's supposed to go in for the operation. Like he literally does not like fall asleep because like he picks cotton and stuffs his ear himself with it. Like yeah, like that whole entire, it's just like so many,
there's like so many like ironies. Symbols
yeah.
and stuff.
The last 20 minutes of the movie are a fucking whirlwind of too many things going, like you have to watch it like six times to even be like, oh god.
It's like the whole movie, like there's, I mean, there's so many I probably didn't even catch, but there's like all the people coming to like the party auction thing show, it's like a bunch of white people showing up in black cars, like,
oh shit,
they're riding in on like black bodies and stuff like that.
Holy
and you're
fuck.
Just like, it's just so many like layers of, I have to watch this so many times to see it all.
Could it have a double meaning too? I mean, I get the like white people within a black car, but also could it be like, this is your fucking funeral, Chris? Like, you're basically,
yeah, I mean, dead after they all like, look like it's like hearses or whatever. The
it's what
car
it felt
is.
Like to me when I yeah. like both times I watched it, I was like, they're fucking, they're nefarious, these white people. I don't know,
no, for sure.
Yeah, does anyone have like a favorite scene in the movie as far as like, because I think mine is any scene with Rod. Is my favorite. I'm a sucker for comedic relief, so his character is just so well written as like a concerned friend, but also like crazy conspiracy theorist. I think it ties in so well that you're just like, yep, this is like one of the most believable characters in this movie, and I will ride or die with Rod till the end of my fucking days. I don't know.
I think my favorite scene was the first hypnotism.
Mm.
I just liked, what did I like about it? I don't know. I just thought that the actor who played Chris did really well
definitely.
In that scene, like invoking emotion. And I think that it was just shot really well, but I don't really have anything specific besides
gotcha.
This.
I do really like the effect they do with the whole like deep quiet place or whatever. And he,
yeah.
he's like falling into the, yeah, that shit still blows my mind. Like that's such a cool effect. I can't believe it's such a vivid image of like him falling into this nothingness. Very good effect.
Let's see. For me, I think my favorite, I guess like scene, it might be like a considered a series of scenes, but it's like, it's during the party itself where like you realize that like there, it isn't, it's like for the viewer, it starts affirming like all the shit where it's like, okay, all the stuff like you might have been writing off as just like really fucking weird or like a bunch of white people who don't know how to interact like with black people because they're like their social upbringing or whatever, you know, and just like the state of the situation or whatever, when it starts, like, affirming that, like, no, there's, like, some really fucked up shit actually going on, and it's, like, very plain. It's, like, I think the moment was, like, Chris goes upstairs to, like, talk to Rose, and, like, everyone's, like, chatting downstairs, and they all stop, and they just, like, look up the, like, stairwell as Chris, like, went up it, and you're, like, okay, like, it's official now. Like, shit is not normal anymore. Like, beforehand, like, you could write it off as just people were just, like, fucking, like, really oblivious and, like, racist and stuff like that. And, like, trying to fit in or seem like, nah, they're cooling down with it. But then you realize it's like, okay, yeah, it's actually
hella fucked. Oh, it's culty. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That scene is, like, still really weird to me because of how, like, just so eerie and creepy it is that up until that point you're like, yeah, this could just be a really awkward, weird gathering of like white people, pretty standard white people business, and then they all like stop and listen to him be like just existing, like, upstairs, and you're like,
oh, they're all here just for Chris.
Yeah, like, it's so fucked up. I can't, like, oh my god, what a change of tone that scene like brings to the entire film, basically. Tom, you have a favorite of yours?
I don't really remember anything specific. That scene we just talked about definitely like is one of the ones that sticks out in my mind.
It's very powerful,
like, very memorable. I don't know. Like, I don't really have a favorite scene. I guess once I knew what was going on, I really appreciated all the scenes previously because I like understood them more.
Gotcha.
I mean, I guess like all the resolution of the climax is really like satisfying, where it's like he kills them all and stuff, you know. Jeremy dies, thank
it's
god.
It's so gratifying.
God,
I feel like the first time I watched it, I was like clenching my teeth, like, fuck yeah, ruin this family, they've ruined your life.
Yeah,
the first time Jeremy like dies, quote unquote, though, I'm like, that's a lot of blood.
Yeah, I was like, there's no
dude
way he's
should
alive,
not have woken up.
I was like, no, dude, you gotta like double check that, and then it's like there's like so much blood, and I was like, okay, no, it's fine. Like,
yeah,
the bocce ball. Oh my god.
God.
Oh yeah. Holy shit, I forgot about just the like ramping up of the gore in that part is just, like really telling of just how intense it gets.
It's also like, oh, you like part of that thing, like the entire scene too, like there was just so much, like you could feel the adrenaline. Almost, because like there's that moment where I think it was like the mom, like after like he like sees the teacup and like he smashes it, and then she like pulls out like a pocket knife or something like that,
like a letter opener.
And then he just like catches it with his hand, and you're just like, this dude is so like
giving a fuck.
Yeah, like I think about that to the point of I'm like, how do you go on with life after that, right? Like, how do you possibly hope to get back to how life used to be? It's just like you don't at that point, and
that's scarring, seriously.
Yeah, but god, there was something else in that scene. Oh, I really appreciate it as well too, where it's like where Georgina got hit and like by the car, and she was just like dying, and like he had that moment where he was like, fuck dude, like he's like, just go, like just fucking go, like, you know, it's like, you know, she's part of the like the entire thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
but he doesn't know like to what extent,
right?
It just like reminded him so much of his mom. I think that he just like had to do something.
Yeah, that entire
bad.
That moment where it's just like he knew, he was like, nope, like just keep going. But then he's like, fuck, like he still couldn't like just leave her there. And I thought that was also like a really cool touch.
I thought he was in that scene because he doesn't actually say, you know, like, oh, I gotta go get her, or like whatever.
He just
it's
does
more
it.
Subtle. It's something like.
But he was like, "Don't do
he's
it."
He's like,
Chris.
"Don't do it, don't do it." And I thought when he was saying "don't do it" that he was gonna pass out again because it was like triggering the like
blood loss or whatever.
Triggering the hypnosis.
Oh right.
So I thought he was gonna like just be in a standstill, and I'm like, "No,
oh,
not
shit.
Now. You're like leaving," and then he just like got up and got her, and I'm like, that's also a bad idea.
Those are two bad things. You don't
what
want that.
What are you
that.
Doing?
Talking about the, like, hypnosis part, though, I super appreciate the sound design of, like, the spoon being the trigger of it. And even before he's hypnotized first and, like, cured of his smoking addiction, but also like put in the like dark place for the first time and like actually fucked. When she like first makes tea, like the spoon noise is basically, I bet if you were like listening to headphones or whatever, it's like the same like loop of a spoon doing that thing just as like methodically as possible. And I feel like that's super important because you're like, this could probably like actually hypnotize people in like a very serious way. I wonder if like actual therapists actually do have like a weird tea spoon thing. I don't know.
I don't know much about hypnotism, but I think there's like triggers and things.
Yeah. And I feel like it's just a like very good depiction of like a therapist using hypnosis in a way that fucks people up. Where it could be
there's a pretty common technique called EMDR where they use something similar. Like they probably wouldn't call it hypnosis, but they do make people enter a state of like heightened suggestibility, mm-hmm. and they basically a lot of times it's done by touch or visual sensories, where they basically and then you recall memories and then they ask you like basically they like because when you recall memories. The only way you remember those memories later is if you have to store them again. So if you recall it and then change like the instance of that memory and then store it again, you then remember that differently. So it's good for people with like trauma. They can remember their trauma differently and therefore the trauma doesn't affect them as much.
I see.
In their day-to-day life. And so, yes, therapists use
something
all that
similar.
To say, yes, therapists do.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I never thought of like a memory kind of like being popped out and then like reshaped and then put back in, mm-hmm. as like the way to fix, not fix, but like remedy some aspect of trauma. That's very interesting.
No, it's like, yeah, it's like getting more use now in the last like 8 to 10 years or something. Yeah.
Credibility.
As like a legitimate strategy. I know like my stepdad's done it and says like, he swears by it. He says
yeah,
it's really awesome.
It sounds freaking, if it works as you've described it, like, that's would be insanely helpful.
Yeah.
For cool. Replacing people's mind.
No. Definitely not, yeah, definitely not, like, a one-session thing, though. You gotta be some,
oh,
like,
definitely.
You gotta be some ace memory detective to do that.
Yeah. This is
bringing it back to Phoenix. Right?
Sorry. Yeah.
This was a good movie.
It was. And, I mean, it did so many things well, like creative writing, like effective and like really subtle use of foreshadowing, character development.
Yeah.
Just a lot of.
The camera work was really good, but that's always good. Like even in Key and Peele skits, you're like, this is really good camera work for like what it is.
Yeah, they're pros. Mm-hmm. Also, I like the use of Donald Glover's Redbone in the beginning of the movie. That's just a really good song. So.
Oh.
I'm always a fan of that. But yeah, I guess that's basically it about Get Out for this episode. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I had to say.
Cool.
Yeah. So get out of here.
Get on out of here. And follow us on Twitter. Medit Podcast. No, seriously. Thank you for listening. This was a fun episode. This movie is such a trip. I'll probably watch it again just because now we're done with the episode. Like, what else am I going to do with my time? Mysterious May is obviously over. It's June now. Whoops. But we're still going to talk about a book next episode, probably.
Something like that.
Maybe not. I don't know. Either way, again, thank you for listening to the Medit Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Medit Podcast, Facebook, Medit Podcast, and continue listening to us on your favorite podcatcher, like Podbean or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. This has been the Medit Podcast. You've been Medit.
Bye.